Hi, I'm Pam Myers, producer of Lip Service, a podcast of our coming out stories. I came out later in life, and like many of the storytellers on our podcast, I had no role model and nowhere to look to find support and learn what it was like to come out. So I created this podcast to support our LGBTQ+ community, to inspire and foster connection, create empathy, and record our coming out stories for our history. I invite you to listen to these sometimes emotion-provoking and always inspiring stories. Please share with your community, and if you're up for it, you can sign up to share your coming out story. Use the calendar link on our website, lipservice.media. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you. Thanks for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lip Service, a podcast of our coming out stories. I am your host, Pam Myers, and I'm here today with Jill. And Jill is the mother of a trans child. And we're here to have a conversation of a different type, to talk about what the experience has been like for Jill being a mom, and touch upon a little bit about what it's been like for their child. So, Jill, thanks so much for being on the program today. I really appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
So, how old was your child when they first came to you?
I'll give you a little bit of a background in terms of our family story. I call it our family adventure. But I have four kids. I have a daughter who is 20. And then I had what I thought were three little boys right in a row. And I found out, you know, and they're right now they are 17, 15, and 14. So my youngest, who is 14, she is my trans daughter. And when they were little, their dad and I were very much, all the kids could play with what they wanted to play with. They could wear what they wanted to. Like, there was nothing stereotypical that we made them do, I guess you could say. So they really were free to be who they were. And the older three really kind of gravitated to the more stereotypical gender preferences that you would say, and our youngest did not. And so he at the time, and I do go back and forth with pronouns, one, because I remember the stories as a little boy, but I also think it helps people who maybe are new to what it means to have a trans kid. It helps them understand the journey a little bit better when I go back and forth with pronouns, but I do stress how important pronouns are and what a big advocate we are of pronouns. So, just with that being said, I had this 2 or 3 year old little boy that just loved to wear his sister's dresses, play with Barbies, wear the little Disney high heels, the Disney princess dresses, and we were fine with it. It didn't bother us at all. And it was a way for him to feel close to his sister, who was, 4 years older. But then as we started to kind of go through getting into kindergarten and stuff like that, it just never stopped. And then probably about kindergarten is when he at the time said, mommy, I'm a girl. And I just knew that I needed to kind of get some guidance. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do this right. We were okay with it. We just knew though that I knew that I needed a lot of education to do it right, I guess, or not mess it up, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into kindergarten and I was talking to their teacher and I said, I have this little boy that's going to come in and every time dress up happens, he's going to pick the princess dresses. He's going to come to school with nails painted. If you give him a choice between a pink and a blue folder, he's going to pick the pink one every time. And I need your help protecting him. And she was wonderful. And she said, every little boy in kindergarten comes with their nails painted at some point. It is just sort of just happens. And I said, that's wonderful. I said, this is a little different than just coming to school with nails painted. So, mm-hmm. And so I really made sure I had good teachers in his, at the time, his life. And then in first grade, I talked to, again, his pediatrician at the time, like, can you know if somebody's trans at 5, 6 years old? And the pediatrician said, yes, I think you can. But right now we're just going to love, you're just going to love him and we're going to figure this out. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And so then at the end of first grade is when we socially transitioned. So, he up to that point at the time was wearing girl clothes at home and we would start to go out a little bit. I really let my child lead the discussion on when they wanted to wear their clothes, and by their clothes, I mean their girl clothes. And then at the end of first grade is when we socially transitioned. So went very into first grade in the clothes that she was most comfortable in, and worked on pronoun changing, kind of tried out some different names. And then by the time we got into second grade, so we went through that summer kind of practicing all the things. And then when we got into second grade is when she was socially transitioned fully. So, we then went to, and at that point, all it is, you know, growing hair out, clothes, name, pronouns, like nothing that's irreversible. And then at about 10 is when we started puberty blockers with our doctor. And then she started estrogen about a year and a half ago and just is living her absolute best life. And it's just been, you know, it's been a journey. It's been a real adventure, I say. About 6 years old is when I found the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico. And I was able to reach out to the director there, Adrian Lawyer. And he was just our lifeline. And really helped get my family kind of through this without panicking. And that was the biggest thing that I tried to instill in my whole family is we're not going to panic about this. And we're going to take our time and we're not going to rush and we're going to gather all the information and kind of go through that way. So
how good answer. Yeah.
Well, I had a big sigh of relief when you said the doctor said we're just going to continue to love.
Yes.
What was your initial reaction when they came to you and said, "Mommy, I think I'm a girl."
I already knew. I had some definite conversations with myself when they were between age 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I already having 3 kids, I kind of saw kind of the progression of what kids like, what they don't like, and what sticks and what doesn't stick. And and you know, so I thought this is just a little different than the other three. And so when she came to me, you know, at 5, 6 and said, "I am absolutely a girl." And then it was like, okay, my job right now is to just listen and educate myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did, and kind of threw myself into the community and sort of have never looked back. So, it's not easy. It's daunting. It is daunting. I don't want to give the impression that it was easy. It wasn't hard to support her. That's not ever been an issue for any of my family. We've been very lucky. But it is daunting to think, how am I going to do this? And because you feel so alone, as a parent in the beginning. So, yeah.
And how did the school, it sounds like, was really like, this is kind of common. How did the fellow students react for that transition? Was that a challenge or smooth as butter, or
without missing a beat? They just knew she was a girl and were so excited that she now was wearing the same clothes as they were. I mean, it was just so smooth. And you know, she's going into high school now, and there are kids who do every now and then will remember who she was in first grade mm-hmm. and will maybe say something, but and in a jerk kind of way, but mm-hmm. she just doesn't listen. Like it's, she's so confident in who she is. And, you know, so mm-hmm. the school and friends have been relatively easy. I have worked really hard though to advocate for her. And to teach her to advocate for herself in those situations. It's gotten a little harder with the current administration. People are quite a bit bolder right now. But you know, that is hopefully going to pass at some point.
Right. Yeah. And what made you reach out to the Transgender Resource Center? How did you connect with them?
Well, it's interesting. My sister at her workplace had a Trans 101 training, and it just sort of aligned with the same timing. And she knew that what was happening with our family. And she just said, I've got this card from TGRC. They just did a training. Adrienne Lawyer is the name of the director. Reach out. And so I did. I called him immediately and just said, I need some help. And, but it was just sort of kismet. Like the stars just sort of aligned over a couple week period of like, oh shoot, I really need to get some guidance. And my sister having this Trans 101 training. So, which I didn't even know existed. So, right. You know, now I talk at them all the time. So.
Oh, well, wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are great. TGRC NM does some great trainings and
yes,
really highly recommend them. They just put it on a level that you can really understand so
mm-hmm.
easily.
Yes. It's easy to understand. You know, they use layman terms. They do it in a way that anybody can understand and hopefully can receive it with compassion and empathy. And they're, you know, they're nationally recognized for these trainings. And it's just been such an honor to have been asked to sit on a panel. So I've done, I don't know, 100 panels with them. And it's just been such an honor to watch people's eyes kind of like, oh, okay, it's not so scary. And mm-hmm. it's not so bad. And it's not so dangerous. And, you know, I'm not going to go to hell for doing this. You know,
right. Thing, so. Right. For loving and supporting your child.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, I don't want to get too down in the weeds with negativity, but what was the hardest part for you going through the whole process? If you're going to give advice to other, you know, parents, other families.
The hardest part, feeling alone, that was probably the hardest part in the beginning, is because you think you're the only parent who's experiencing this. Mm. And then, and it's just not true. There's so many families like mine, and it's been really great to be able to reach out and meet them, and we can help guide each other through this process. That was probably the hardest thing at first. The next hardest thing were, I had some religious families. We are not a religious family, but we did have some religious families tell my child at 6 years old that God doesn't love them anymore. Mm. And that, you know, and it's children telling this to children. And, you know, that comes from the parents, you know, that's, you know, and what a daunting thing to come out of a child's mouth. They don't even understand what that means, you know, let alone my child doesn't, you know, and so that was really hard. I was very sad about that encounter. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I also don't want to put it lightly, the idea of doing puberty blockers or starting hormone therapy. It is a little daunting to think, okay, I'm going to be putting these chemicals in my child's body. And what does that mean? And what does that mean for her life? And what does that mean for her quality of life. And so a lot of research goes into that. So I think a lot of negativity that comes towards parents like me it comes from obviously ignorance, but no parent that I know of a trans kid takes the hormone therapy, the medical side of it, lightly. It is a big decision, and it is one that's done with doctors and pediatricians and endocrinologists, and it's done with a lot of knowledge and care and time. And so I just, you know, that is hard for me when people, you know, will say something negative about parents helping their child with hormone therapy. But then if you look at the statistics on what it means when kids don't get that therapy before puberty, it was a no-brainer for me. So, you know, to not get too dark, but I would so much rather have a trans kid than a dead kid.
Right.
So, you know, and that sounds so dark, but it's for many families, it's true. And that wasn't going to be my family. So,
Because it just causes so many emotional and mental.
Oh, yes. And the statistics are staggering of when these kids are not offered the opportunity to do hormone therapy. Right. And it is so safe. There's so many, and a lot of it's also reversible. And, you know, I wasn't worried, and I'm not worried that my child will change her mind. This has been our life since she was, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, 5 to 7 years before we ever started any medical side of things. So I felt really confident that we were doing the right thing. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how, what would be your biggest, or what would be some advice? Do you have advice to families? I imagine you do, that, you know, whose child comes to them and says, hey, I think there's something going on with me. I'm identifying this way.
My biggest advice is to listen. That is the biggest, I think, gift we can give our kids, whether they're trans, whether they're part of the LGBTQIA+ rainbow or not, I think is just listening to them. And if your child is truly trans, there's so many, or even if they're just thinking of playing around with pronouns or playing around with names, like a lot of this stuff is just trying things on. It doesn't necessarily mean they're trans, but it could. I mean, it's one of those things where it's just, my biggest advice is to just sort of find the transgender resource center in your state. And because most states do have one and have some sort of subset of one, and just kind of reach out to, my motto is kind of, I needed to reach out to people that were smarter than me, further down the path than me, wiser than me in terms of what they've experienced, you know, and get their take, get their knowledge, I guess. So that would be my biggest advice, is one, listen, and two, find kind of the community within your area to reach out to. So, and you can do it anonymously. You can get this information without ever giving your name. You know, they're most of these, businesses are very aware of anonymity and respecting people's privacy. So.
Right. Yeah. And, I wanted to add before, I don't know the exact statistic, and maybe you do, but I know that the suicide rate of trans children and children just looking to find their identity is extremely high.
It is. It's about 40% if they get no services or no support.
Yeah.
It goes down to about 4%, which I believe is the national average. I could be wrong, but it drastically drops if they get support from even just one part of their life. So whether it's family, school, church, you know, it's amazing. And then I think too, like, well, what if they got support from all the areas in their life? We could eliminate, you know, virtually eliminate suicide among trans kids, which, I mean, gosh, what a dream to have, you know? So when I read those statistics, that's really what it was, a no-brainer for me, was like, and, you know, and the other thing, if I could just add one more thing, is,
yeah,
parents just, when people, one of the biggest things we can do too, is to eliminate things like making fun of trans people, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is something that I really truly advocate for when I do panels, is if you're in an environment where people are making fun of trans people, one, don't join in, and two, put a stop to it. Mm-hmm. It's, even if it's just all in fun, it's not all in fun. This is my baby, right? This is my child. This is, I have four amazing children and I don't want anything bad to happen to any of them. But when you have a child that is part of such a marginalized group, we can try to help eliminate some of the negativity by doing that simple thing.
Right. Listening, being supportive. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you hear conversations going on that are not positive and not nurturing, then you have the power, right? Any of us have the power to control that, to change the narrative.
Because you're making fun of somebody's baby.
Right. I mean,
you know, somebody's child, somebody's loved one. And yep.
Someone's life.
Nobody likes that.
Right. And who are we to judge? Right. We are.
Right. And yeah. And what a gift I have been given to be a mom to a trans child. I mean, it's, you know, I feel very, very lucky. And she's amazing. And like I said, thriving, living her best life. And I refuse to not let that be the case for any of my kids.
Yeah. Well, Jill, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story to help other parents and other families know what's, you know, how they can work through it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening. And if you are needing help connecting with resources in your community and you don't know where to go, you can reach out to us through lipservice.media and we are here to help you however we can. So thank you so much for supporting this podcast. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jill.
Hi, it's Pam here. Well, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe, like, and share. And if you happen to know someone that you think is struggling with coming out, please connect them to our website, lipservice.media, and they can message us and we'll do what we can to connect them with support services in that area that can help them. And if you can afford to, please donate through the donation tab on our website to help us keep up with the work we are doing. Your donations are tax deductible. Thanks so much again for listening. We appreciate you.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.